Welcome to Hogtails, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Hey guys, just a little note about Mimi's piece this week. It contains a fair bit of graphic depictions of violence done to the slaves in New Orleans, so if you're sensitive to particularly graphic accounts of violence, I would recommend that you maybe skip the second portion of this episode. Her piece starts at about 30 minutes in, so if you wanted to listen to the first half and then maybe step out for the second half, that is totally fine. We completely understand. So thank you very much for listening and enjoy the show. All right, so we're back again for another episode of Haunt Heads. I'm sure you were all perched eagerly on the edges of your seats. I am Janine. I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven. Hello, everyone.
How are you doing today, Mimi?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, keeping busy.
Good.
Keeping busy. I found a little picture frame for my little mummified piglet, so...
Yes,
I'm
very cute.
Happy about that. Painted it up, so it's a pretty teal color now.
Mm-hmm.
Really offsets the
I like it.
Shrunken tissue of the piglet, so...
Yes.
Yeah. Did you do anything exciting as of recent?
Well, we had my brother's party because he just got married for the second time.
Right.
So we had a lot of family over, and that's always, you know, nice, but always really busy. And I went and saw Wonder Woman.
Oh, you did. Now, what did you think of it?
It was okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, you know, I've been hearing, oh, it's wonderful, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it was wonderful. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, you know, I'm of the same camp. We went to see it at the Marcus Cinema, the mm-hmm. one in Menominee Falls with the Dream
okay.
Loungers.
Yeah.
And I would say the best part of the movie would be, for me, well, there would be two. When I settled into the Dream Lounger and when the movie was over. Because it was not... I don't know what I was expecting. I think I was expecting something a little bit more Linda Carter-esque. And I didn't feel like I got that. I felt like the whole gala scene was put in there just so we could see her carry around a sword in her ass.
Yeah, and just...
It served no
yeah.
other purpose. You know, and then, of course, immediately when she sleeps with Steve, I'm
right.
like, oh, what the hell?
Yes. I would have liked to seen his naked chest, but that's just me.
But I mean, like, she's supposed to be an Amazon.
Right.
You know, like, I don't need men, I'm supposed to be an Amazon. And she's been raised in that culture. I mean, how old would you say she is when she sets out to fight the Nazis?
Well, like, I think she was supposed to be like 18, 19.
Yeah, so I mean, she's lived 18, 19 years on this island with all of these other strong women. And so she's just going to sleep with Steve? I mean, she hasn't even known him that long.
But she was attracted to him.
Well, yeah, but that's not the point. You don't just randomly sleep with people just because you're attracted. Well, maybe you do, but
that's
not something
people
that Wonder
do.
Woman is supposed to do. I don't know. I found it rather frustrating just because I watched the original Wonder Woman
mm-hmm.
TV show and huge fan of Linda Carter. I've actually seen her at a Comic-Con.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah. Yeah, was not really tickled.
Yeah, no.
But, I mean, some of the effects were cool. I didn't
yeah.
really see the ending coming. I don't want to give away the ending.
Right.
But I didn't really see the ending coming, so I mean, I guess that was good. But, yeah.
Eh. I'm just whatever.
And her outfit was okay. I thought her
yeah,
outfit
was
okay.
Yeah, it wasn't as spectacular as I thought it would be, though.
Yeah.
I just thought... I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like there were a lot of people that went into the theater with a certain expectation
mm-hmm.
and just came out like, what the hell did I just see?
Right. Well, you know, I kept hearing from everybody that I knew to saw it. Yeah. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. Oh, it was great. It was great. So I was really expecting something really good. And I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I think if I hadn't heard anything and saw it, I probably would have liked it better.
You would have been,
but I think I went in expecting, wow.
Yeah. Well, and the trailers really amped it up, too. Like, I mean, even if you didn't hear from anybody else and you just saw the trailers, I mean, those were really crazy. Like, if you saw the trailer, you were like, yeah, I want to go see the movie. But then you went to see the movie and it's like, oh. Well.
You know the evil doctor, and she had part of a mask on. And
Dr. Poison.
Yes, and when they took the mask off, it wasn't a big deal what was under there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a little gross, but other than that.
I've seen worse.
I was expecting like boils and pustules and disgusting.
Well, I was expecting something more gruesome than what it was.
Yeah. Well.
So.
I don't know. I guess you win some, you lose some.
I guess. So, well.
I bet that there's a podcast out there that reviews movies.
There is a movie I want to see, though. It's The Mummy with Tom Cruise, even though I don't really like Tom Cruise, but I want to see the movie. The premise looks good, but I don't like Tom Cruise. So.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of Tom Cruise either. But, you know, I mean, maybe it'll be a decent movie. You never know. Depends on the director.
Yeah.
And whether or not he allows Tom Cruise to be Tom Cruise in another movie. Because that's the thing, like, if Tom Cruise is in a movie, Tom Cruise is playing himself in the movie.
Uh-huh.
It's just like Keanu Reeves. You put Keanu Reeves in any role, and it's Keanu Reeves being Keanu Reeves in this movie.
But I do like Keanu Reeves.
I like him
There's
too.
There's just something I like about him.
It's just, like, he's just the same
But Tom Cruise
person.
I can't stand.
Like, okay, so Speed.
Right.
And Constantine. Keanu Reeves was Keanu Reeves in both of those movies.
Right.
It was the same person. I liked Constantine better.
I did like Constantine. I like that,
but,
too.
But, I mean, I'm kind of biased because I love Sandra Bullock.
Just what I was going to say.
I love her to pieces. So, I mean, anything that she's in, you know, I'll watch the shit out of it. But it was just, I was like, hey, Keanu Reeves playing yourself in another movie. I don't know. But anyway, so this is Hauntheads and not at all a movie review podcast, so I guess we'll get on to the point. Let's see, we're about 6 minutes in, so yeah, it's about time to get started. So let's see, what do you have this week, Mimi?
Well, I'm doing a story on Madame Delphine LaLaurie. Yes.
Yeah. And it's a long one.
It's a very long one.
Yes, but that's okay, because we have time.
Yes.
It's not like people have no choice but to listen to us, but we have time. let's see. I have got the Alton State Hospital in Alton, Illinois. Supposedly, it is still quite haunted, even though it is still in use today as a hospital for the mentally disabled. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so pretty interesting. Apparently a lot of people are experiencing stuff there. So.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's mine. And mine is on the shorter side, but I do have some articles to share with you guys from a website that I found that are from the time that they were starting to put the hospital up, starting to build it. So that should be pretty interesting. Who went first last time?
I did. So
you did.
Get,
so
to,
I
go
get
first.
To go first. Okay. Yes! Get to go first.
Yay!
You know, there's really nothing wrong with going first, because then it means that the other person has to follow you.
Yeah.
So then you got to bring it.
I suppose.
All right. So here is a newspaper clipping from the Alton Telegraph, September 12th, 1912. So it's a little bit of a blast from the past, but... let me just zoom in here, because I'm blind. I'm wearing glasses, and I'm still blind. It's very sad. That's how you know you're getting older. When you're like, wait, please, allow me to put on my spectacles. All right. So, planning finest insane hospital in the world for Alton. The Alton Telegraph, September 12th, 1912. The State Board of Administration came to Alton Wednesday to make their final inspection of sites offered for the new insane hospital to be erected by the state of Illinois here. The members of the board, consisting of Lawrence Sherman, Frank Whip, Frank Norbury, Judge B.R. Burroughs, and Thomas O'Connor, were accompanied by the state architect, W. Carby Zimmerman of Chicago, whom is charged with the responsibility of preparing plans for the hospital, and by Thomas Downs, the supervising engineer. The Board of Administration went over both sites this morning and again this afternoon. They made a good survey of the property on their morning tour and then decided to make closer inspection of the Rogers and Bauman sites this afternoon. They were accompanied by Senator Beal, Eben Rogers, H.J. Bauman Jr., J.M. Pfiffenberger, and Fred Zimmerman, who went in automobiles with them. It was stated by the members of the Board of Administration this afternoon, before they started the afternoon trip, that they were not sure they would reach any decision as to the site today. According to the state architect, Mr. Zimmerman, the new hospital will be the finest in the world and will embody new ideas which have never been applied in this country. Mr. Zimmerman, who is a prominent Chicago architect and a student, has been working for 8 years as a state architect to bring about reforms in insane hospitals. He has ideas, and he believes that they should be applied, the ruling feature of which is this, that places where insane people are confined should have as little appearance as possible to being places of confinement. Mr. Zimmerman, who has traveled abroad and inspected hospitals in Europe to ascertain the best plans for such institutions, said there is one bad feature of all such institutions, that is the appearance of restraint, which has a bad influence on those who are confined there. While there must be restraint for insane people, there should be no appearance of it, and the walls, which really do restrain them, should be so disguised as to remove the mental effect that would be produced by confining influences. Mr. Zimmerman plans to do away with all such objections in the new hospital. He says the mental effect on the patients will be the same if they have perfect freedom, yet they will be closely held at such times when they are not to be given freedom on the grounds. In Italy, he found, the old Catholic cloisters were built around a courtyard, and he adopted this plan for the insane hospital. The buildings that will house the inmates will be built around a series of courtyards, which will then be separated by each other using concrete walls, including pergolas built around beautiful gardens and lawns, and the walls will be covered with vines. In these courts, the patients may walk or recline when the weather is fair and suitable. The pergola walls will connect all parts of the institution so that patients may walk inside them and not get out in making their trips from one part of the building to the other. On the front and back and the sides of the series of buildings, which will constitute the hospital, will be lawns and fields where the patients may walk at times when accompanied by attendants. It will not be necessary for them to have any attendants with them when they are enclosed in the gardens of the courtyard, as they cannot get out. The buildings will be made of brick or concrete, the material to be decided upon when the bids are received. Mr. Zimmerman says that the new hospital buildings will cover an area of 2,100 by 600 feet. The buildings will be set well back from the road in front. Fireproof structural material will be used throughout. There will never be any addition made to this hospital according to the plans. It will house about 1,500 patients. So that was an article from 1912 when they were discussing the locations where they were going to build this supposed hospital. So in 1913, Senator Beal introduced a bill that would appropriate $500,000 for a new hospital to be built that would tackle overcrowding issues within the mental health system of the time. Around this time, there were several hospitals around the area, but all of them were very much overcrowded. Mm-hmm. The conditions were pretty awful, and they were trying to find a way to alleviate the stress on those existing institutions by building this new one. By 1917, after a lengthy build that was wrought with logistical problems, the Alton State Hospital began housing patients. Small groups were already being housed within existing structures on the property, but with the opening of the main structure came an influx of new patients. Dr. George Zeller became the hospital's superintendent and immediately enacted some new therapy protocols. Zeller was a pioneer in the mental health field, and he was credited with the creation of occupational therapy to treat insanity. Many of the patients housed at Alton worked on the grounds in the tobacco fields, or they worked on the farm, and every patient in the institution had free rein of the buildings and the grounds. They could go wherever they wanted. Zeller was a believer in the non-restraint system, so the doors remained open and unlocked. The windows allowed for sunlight and fresh air. Absent were the bars and the mesh screen used at similar institutions of the time. That was general practice. But this free rein idea was a practice that was very much short-lived, as many of the patients would occasionally roam to some of the neighboring farmhouses.
Uh-oh.
And they would scare local farmers, and sometimes they would do damage to the property. Uh-oh. So, yeah, it was not good. Between 1917 and 1919, government agencies pleaded with Zeller for residents at Alton to be restrained for their own safety, not to mention the safety of the staff there. Patients were not only causing pandemonium in the area, but sometimes they met their demise in their wanderings. Several patients were struck by trains and were killed instantly. Others succumbed to injuries and sicknesses that may have been prevented or contained by simply locking the wards or individual rooms.
Okay.
So it would have been a very simple fix, but, Zeller had his ideas in mind. In 1921, Zeller actually resigned, and he returned to the Peoria State Hospital in Peoria, Illinois, where he'd been superintendent prior to moving to Alton. Zeller supposedly returned to address issues of neglect and abuse of the patients there. I think that there's also a speculation that he maybe left because he was being questioned about his methods.
Yeah.
And so he was like, well, if you don't like my methods,
then I'm
just going to leave.
Well, in the time period that he was there, did he do any good for his patients? Did they see?
Well, I mean, there was definite benefit to having this open plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure you know that, back in the day, if you got dropped off at a mental institution, there's a good chance that you could have anything from OCD to alcoholism to postpartum depression to criminal insanity, like violent tendencies that are unpredictable. So, I mean, any and all of those kinds of people are in one environment, and it can make for pandemonium if you're not, paying attention. At this point, the hospital did have sufficient staff so that they could monitor the patients while they were roaming.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, as was the case with a lot of these institutions of the time, that didn't last long because you build one institution to alleviate the other institutions that exist, and then all of a sudden that institution becomes overburdened.
Right.
And then what do you do? Do you keep building, or do you start deciding who is actually legitimately ill, mentally ill, and who is just there because their family doesn't want to take care of them, or, what was another? I saw something really ridiculous recently. There was a whole list of things that you could be institutionalized for.
Well, if women had the vapors.
Or in the early 1900s.
They would
say, the vapors. The vapors was one. Reading was another one. Some husbands would put their wives in there because they were caught reading.
Wow.
What was another one? Wanting to work. If they expressed to their husbands that they wanted to work and their husbands were having no part of it, they could be institutionalized. So, I mean, there were just a whole range of things that you could be institutionalized for. It's like, well, I just wanted to get a job, or I just wanted to read a book, and now all of a sudden I'm in here with people who could be of a danger to me.
Right.
But I have no way to get away from them because there's this free-range policy where everybody can just go wherever. So, I mean, I'm sure, even though it's not mentioned, that there were also probably instances of serious abuses between patients, rape, sodomy. I mean, anything could have happened because even though you have enough staff, that doesn't mean that the staff are always watching, or they're there 110% of the time. I mean, you have to turn your back sometime. You have to change shifts sometime. Mm-hmm. So, any number of things could have happened there. So Zella returned to address issues of neglect in Peoria, Illinois. And apparently there were a lot of reports of abuses of the patients there. Zella confirmed this when he arrived. He saw how the patients were being treated, how they were being housed. And he did something kind of groundbreaking. He ordered his staff, each of them, to take an 8-hour shift living as the patients lived.
Oh, wow.
So he essentially stripped them of all of their power as, mm-hmm. as orderlies. And he told them, now, you live on this ward, you live on that ward, and you report back in 8 hours. And you tell me how everything is in this particular area. Zeller himself spent time as a patient, and he moved between all of the wards to sort out the issues in each of them. So he was really a pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, creating occupational therapy to treat madness. I mean, they still think of that as a viable treatment.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, he was a pioneer. He was a trailblazer. Unfortunately, in 1938, Zeller passed away from a pulmonary infection. But his philosophy of curing the sick instead of treating them as hardened criminals was adopted for a time. By 1921, Alton held 757 patients monitored by 117 staff members. So an average of about 6 patients assigned to every employee. Hydrotherapy became a popular form of treatment. In fact, Alton alone, that particular year in 1921, gave over 65,000 hours of hydrotherapy.
Wow.
Hyperactive patients got quote-unquote calming baths, while lethargy was treated with quote-unquote invigorating sprays or quote-unquote wraps. Although the term hydrotherapy might conjure a long, relaxing soak or, you know, a spritz for like a pick-me-up, this really could not be further from the truth. That is not what hydrotherapy was at all. Patients were often left to soak in tubs for hours or even days.
Ugh.
They were strapped in, unable to move. They had to ask permission to use the facilities, and if somebody wasn't around, well, what do? You
right.
know? Patients were sometimes wrapped in towels drenched in ice water because treating the body with extreme cold would make the patient easier to handle. There were even cases of patients being chained to the wall in Christ pose and sprayed with a fire hose. So this was treatment.
Wow.
In 1940, electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, was introduced. ECT is a procedure in which small electrical currents are passed through the brain, and they're designed to intentionally trigger a seizure. ECT is said to alter brain chemistry and reverse symptoms of certain mental illnesses, but in the early years, it really wound up doing more harm than good in many instances. As you can imagine, it's impossible to know how a patient will react when you've zapped their brain with electricity.
Right.
I mean, you might hit the reset button to help a person lead a more productive life, or you could cause irreparable brain damage.
Right.
That's your, you know, the risk that you're taking. With electroshock came lobotomies, used to treat those considered too far gone for ECT to be effective. The patient population at this time was 1,775. The capacity was only 1,084. That year, 39 lobotomies were performed at Alton, and new medications were introduced, allowing doctors to treat patients in less invasive ways. By 1955, the population at Alton was 2,100, over twice
wow.
the recommended occupancy. So you can just imagine how
wow.
bad it must have been in there. As is often the case with locations like Alton State Hospital, the energies of those who passed away on the property are undoubtedly trapped there. I mean, it's just, with everything that had been done to them, you know, there were people who lost their lives there. They were hit by trains. You know, there was a train track close by. You know, I mean, I think that there were some instances of people went outside and they died of exposure
mm-hmm.
because they just weren't found. You know,
right.
I mean, how easy is it to keep a lookout over 2,100 people, you know, twice
right.
the recommended occupancy? Come on. The practice of electroshock, lobotomy, the hot cold water treatments disguised as therapy were beyond inhumane and likely explain the paranormal activity that's going on right now at the hospital And as I said before, Alton still functions as a mental institution today. I have some information here about what some of the people report. Many people report hearing unusual noises, doors slamming shut, the occasional sounds of disembodied voices whispering to one another. The messages that they're trying to relay are indecipherable. People can't make out what they're saying. They, you know, they think that they know, but as is the case with, you know, when one person hears something, they're like, well, I think it's saying this, and then everything else mm-hmm. is muddled.
Right.
Tours of the building are strictly prohibited because it's still a functioning hospital. But staff members at Alton have reported seeing orbs and experiencing cold spots. They claim to feel as if they're being watched and occasionally are touched by unseen hands while doing their rounds. Those who have taken photos of the building and the surrounding grounds while visiting loved ones at the institution have captured images of orbs that seem to have little human faces in them.
Oh, wow.
Hearing disembodied voices is common, and people have reported seeing ghostly mists in the cemetery, also located on the property. They had their own cemetery, as well as near the railroad tracks. A nurse claims to have heard a voice ask, "Who's that?" from behind her. She turned around to answer, but found that there was nobody there. Nobody else was around her at the time. Later that day, the exact thing happened to another nurse in the same spot on the ward. So I would be interested to know if anybody has ever visited the Alton State Hospital, mm-hmm. either to visit a family member or, you know, just to pop onto the grounds and take a few pictures. Because, I mean, we definitely want to hear about it.
Right.
Would be very interesting to know if anybody has had any paranormal experiences there. Because apparently it's quite active.
Wow. Cool.
As it should be. For everything that went on there. As was the case with every mental institution right. of the time.
Right. So, wow.
That's Alton State Hospital.
I feel sorry for the people.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
Wow.
It's really unfortunate that, you know, there were some people at the time that just couldn't afford to take care of people who right. were mentally ill.
Right.
You know, they either didn't have the means, you know, monetarily, or they didn't have the means physically, you know, time-wise. Right. They just didn't have the time, so they remanded these people to the hospital's care. And, you know, for those innocent people to be abused, I mean, that's just, you know, right. it's horrendous. And
right.
part of history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad part of history.
Yeah. Yes, indeedy.
All right. So I'm going to start with my story.
I'm so excited about this one. I love
this story. Yes, I went out of Wisconsin for this one. All right, folks. Here we go to New Orleans. April 10th, 1834. An evening in New Orleans. Chaos ensues. People running everywhere. There's a fire! A fire in the mansion of Madame Delphine LaLaurie. She emerges from her home carrying jewels, money, and valuables. Her family gets out, but wait, where are her slaves? The fire brigade to Madame. Where are your slaves? Her reply, mind your own business. The brigade runs through the mansion looking for slaves. What they find is horrifying. In the kitchen, they find an old woman, about 70, chained to the kitchen stove. She states she started the fire to escape the madam's cruelty. The brigade ascends the stairs to the attic, where they hear moaning and crying. Upon entering the attic, the gruesome scene is unhidden. Slaves are chained to the walls with spike collars around their necks. People were starving. They were beaten, whipped, tortured. Some accounts say slaves were kept in tiny cages, unable to move. Some had their fingernails torn from their fingers. One woman had her bones broken and reset to resemble a crab. Oof. A female slave was found with her intestines hanging out and wrapped around her waist. A male slave was found with his eyes dug out. Many historians believe these accountings are blown out of proportion. But most believe she did many dehumanizing and evil things to her slaves. It is said in 1833, Madame LaLaurie had a 12-year-old slave girl who threw herself off the roof and died. Why? The girl was supposedly brushing the madam's hair when she pulled a snarl, which angered Madame, who who chased the girl around the mansion with a whip. The girl decided to end her life rather than take a beating from LaLaurie. LaLaurie was born in 1787. She was from a well-to-do family who owned many slaves. She was considered a normal, gentle, courteous socialite of the times. She was married 3 times. Her third husband was a doctor who was considered cruel. He was thought, but not really proven, to have been using voodoo to make his slaves more docile. Some believe it was he who was using the slaves to perform medical experiments. In 1771, Madam's uncle was brutally murdered by his slaves. Between the years of 1781 and 1804, there was a Haitian slave revolt, and in 1811, there was a slave uprising in New Orleans. The slaves in Haiti were said to be raping, beheading, murdering the white people there. In New Orleans, the plantation owners, slave owners, were terrified. They began using spike collars so their slaves could not sleep, whippings, chainings, chaining the slaves, caging them in, some cases hobbling them. The slave owners were terrified of being killed in their sleep, or worse. In a book by Daniel Rasmussen, American Uprising, he said that over 100 slaves were beheaded, and their heads were placed on poles from the center of New Orleans throughout the countryside, about 40 miles long, which I had never heard of before in anything that I've been told about that time period. But oh, wow, can you imagine? I mean, much like...
That's crazy.
Much like Count Dracula. Yes.
Vlad Tepes.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people in Wallachia see him as a hero.
Right.
And a conqueror.
Right.
And then there are a lot of other people who see him as, you know, quite the tyrant and quite the violent man, you know, unpredictable.
Right.
It was actually, did I ever tell you that I bought a Dracula comic book from a guy who was from Transylvania and he lived like less than 2 miles from Dracula's castle?
So cool. If I could ever afford to go there, I would love to spend the night.
Well, that's probably the closest that I will ever get to Dracula's castle is, you know, because I heard that he started talking to me and I was like, you're not from around here. I said, are you from Russia, you know, somewhere? And he was like, No, I'm from Transylvania. And I was like, yes, you are. And I'm buying a Dracula comic from you. This is awesome. So, yeah, he talked to me for a little bit. And I just love, like, different parts of the world and different accents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, to date, that is now my favorite accent.
Cool.
A Transylvanian accent.
Cool. Wow. All right, so bodies of dead slaves were also placed on the gates of the entrance to the city. They were just kind of hung there, if you can imagine how horrible. In 1833, when the 12-year-old jumped, Madame was forced to pay $300 and sell 9 slaves. She had people from her family buy her slaves back, and she in turn paid the family members for them, so she got them back.
Oh.
So she
was 12 years old, this girl?
The girl who jumped off the roof, yeah, was 12 years old. And the laws at the time, you know, governing slaves were very, there were some laws there. You had to feed them and take care of them.
Right, yeah.
But very loose laws. So when they saw the madam, actually, the madam was burying her in her backyard. When they saw the madam burying the girl, the neighbors complained. So they said, okay, instead of putting you in jail, we're just going to fine you $300, and you have to get rid of 9 slaves. But the way around it was that she could get her family to buy her slaves back, and then she would pay them for her slaves, and then she got them back. After the fire in the LaLaurie mansion and all the accounts of the atrocities in the attic, the true accounts of what was found is in the following, according to Rasmussen. 7 slaves were found suspended by their necks and badly mutilated. A man had a hole in his head filled with maggots. Slaves had...
I'm going to have to add a disclaimer to the beginning of this episode.
Uh-oh.
To let people know, because if I'm getting grossed out...
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Slaves had scars, they were starving, and were chained. There were people with bloody welts from whippings. There were spike collars around their necks, and they were fed maggot-infested gruel. This kind of brutality was actually common to many slave owners of the time because of the earlier uprisings. However, the times were changing, and people were becoming concerned with the treatment of slaves and were making laws to promote good welfare for the slaves. After the fire, the townspeople were so angry and mortified by what Lori did, they wanted her to be punished. They rioted. People, in one accounting, it was said that 4,000 people were in the town rioting against her.
Oh, wow.
So before anything could happen to her, she escaped to Paris, where it's said she died. Hmm. Although some say she was reinterred from Paris after she died to New Orleans, to a New Orleans cemetery. Some say she never left New Orleans.
Yeah.
And some say she never died. She faked her death in Paris and came back to New Orleans later to die.
Yeah.
Now,
there's a lot of speculation about that, too. They actually did a season of American Horror Story.
Okay.
About, I think it was Coven, where it takes place in New Orleans, and it's this coven of witches, and it's like a school for witches. And one of the, they call them Supremes, so like ultra witches, actually brings LaLaurie back from the grave, and it turns out that she's buried in a courtyard on her own property.
Oh, okay.
And her house has been turned into a museum.
Yes.
So it's like, it's kind of like this weird duality of having somebody from a completely different time coming in and, you know, but yeah, they said that, oh, well, she was buried on her own property, right, and then, you know, they rose her from the dead. So Coven is a pretty interesting series. Cool. They also do the Axeman of New Orleans.
Ooh, well, I don't know about that one. I'll have to look that one up now. Okay, maybe next week. The LaLaurie Mansion still stands. It's located at 1140 Royal Street. It is said that for nearly 200 years, there have been paranormal happenings at the mansion. After the mansion was turned into apartments, after she died and stuff, a man was brutally murdered in an apartment in 1894. His friend said that the murdered man said there was a demon in the house. In the mid-1800s, the mansion was turned into, before it was apartments, it was actually turned into an African-American girls' school.
Oh.
During this time, girls were physically assaulted. They had scratches on their arms and all over their bodies. Yeah. When the teachers asked them what happened, they would say, "That woman, that woman." Hmm. And at the time, nobody said anything about, they wanted it quiet. They didn't want any connection to LaLaurie.
Wow.
During a ghost tour, now it's the LaLaurie Mansion is the LaLaurie Mansion, and you can take ghost tours in it.
Yeah,
so it's like a museum.
You can go up to the attic, too, right? They take you all the way up to the top of the house?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think so.
Oh. So during a ghost tour, a medium experienced immense sadness. If you are interested in more, take a tour yourself. Someday, I plan on it. So that's it, guys. Let's go visit the LaLaurie Mansion.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an awesome place to visit. It's definitely on my bucket list of haunted places that I want to go see.
Yeah, it wouldn't be bad to drive down there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, New Orleans itself has just this kind of feeling of intense, like,
yes,
power, almost. It's almost like it's on a power center. You know? Yes.
Have you ever been?
No, I've never been.
I was there when I was little.
But I've heard from other people that have been there. Our neighbor actually went there. He is part of a singing duo, and they do a lot of kid shows and stuff. I'm not going to do the name here because, you know, if he pays me for it, then I'll give him some.
Right.
I'll give him a little buck. but sorry, Dave. So, yeah, he went down there recently with his partner, and they were, like, you know, doing different, you know, they do libraries, they do, like, little kids, like, you know, shows mm-hmm. in the streets, stuff like that. And I thought for sure that he was going to bring me back a voodoo doll.
Mm-hmm.
Because, obviously, hello,
right.
I'm a little creepy. Right. So I was kind of, you know, excited about that. And then he came back and he was like, oh, I forgot. I have something in my house. I brought you something back from New Orleans. And I was like, yes, 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 yes. And then he brought it out and it was bread pudding.
Oh, no, said, well, Dave, you like, bombed.
I was like, well, thank you for the bread pudding. I mean, we haven't tried it yet. I'm sure it's delicious bread pudding, but I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, bummer.
Because I had a friend in college, some friends of his went down to New Orleans, and they brought him back a voodoo doll. And it was, like, 2 feet high, and it was all handmade and hand-wrapped, and it smelled amazing. Like, it smelled like all these different kinds of, like, spices yeah. and herbs, and it was just, it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. And I was like, oh. I hope he brings me back a voodoo doll, and then I got bread pudding instead. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, I guess not. Well, we'll have to take a trip. It's not too bad to drive down there.
But how far is it, would you say?
Maybe a day and a half driving.
That's not terrible.
A little more. But, you know, with four of us, mm-hmm. we could each take turns driving.
That's true. That is true.
Although, personally, I'd want to stop for the night somewhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I was there when I was much younger, maybe 12, and it was beautiful, just beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there are a lot of classic, like, old houses, mm-hmm. and you can visit, like, the old
right.
plantation houses
right.
and Bourbon Street. And,
right.
You know, I mean, I'd really like to go there during Mardi Gras just to see all the floats, because there's a whole
yeah.
history behind the floats, too, that... You know, it's like family histories, and it's carried down, and it's very...
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't remember all the details right now,
right.
but I remember that it's very... they have some very specific guidelines that they have to follow when they're doing their
right.
floats and dressing and
right.
stuff like that. So it's very intricate and very ornate.
Wow.
And I'm not really so much into, like, the flashing of the tatas and getting the beads.
Yeah.
But
I'm not
like
interested
all
in
floats.
All the people. Too many
people
just kind of creeps me out.
Yeah,
but...
no, I'm not really a fan. I actually,
yeah.
I saw an episode of, I think it was American Pickers.
Uh-huh.
And they go to New Orleans and they actually go into one of, like, the big storehouses for all the floats. Because some of those floats are really, really old.
Yeah.
You know, they've been using them for years and years and
right.
years. And so they got to buy some of the stuff from some of the really old Mardi Gras floats. So it was really cool. You got to go in there and see all the pieces. And
mm-hmm.
it's all like, it's kind of like haunting, you know, because everything is taken apart
yeah.
and it's dormant.
Right.
And then, you know, it all comes alive, you know, from
right.
Mardi Gras. So it's kind of cool. But yeah, we
yeah.
absolutely have to go there.
Yeah.
Someday.
Okay.
Someday.
We need to start writing down. And then we need a huge bucket list that we
well,
can
you know
check
what?
Off places
you know
we
go. Should do. You should start listening to some of these episodes, even though you hate the sound of your voice.
I do. I don't like the sound of my voice.
That'll be your homework.
That's
be your
my
job.
Big problem, is listening to my voice.
That's your homework now.
It's so nasally.
It's not nasally.
Oh, but
it's
it is.
Just, no, it's not. It's just higher pitched.
That too.
Mine is just lower pitched. You know? I mean, we all have different voices.
Yeah.
To quote a Wisconsinite I heard once, for the fuck's sake, it's just the way your voice is. It's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody loves it. Everybody loves your infectious laugh. Nobody ever says anything about my fucking laugh. They're always like, Mimi and her infectious laugh, and I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Oh, stop it.
All right, well, are we done for the week?
I think we are done.
All right. Well, guys, thanks again for listening to us. We really appreciate it. Be sure that you take the time to drop us a review on iTunes. We would really super appreciate it.
Yes, we really want to hear from you.
And, of course, you know, send us your favorite folklore tales, your favorite urban legends, you know, anything spooky that's ever happened to you, send it our way. We'd love to start doing mini episodes and read those on the show for you guys. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Stay spooky.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews, because your reviews will help us improve, and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening, and stay spooky.